From the Hill Country in Texas, broadcasting worldwide, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
Yow. Oh, hold on. Oh. Well, a very pleasant good morning to you. It would be the Real World Money Show because it's Wednesday. And there's something like that. If it's Tuesday, it must be England or Britain or France. I don't know. There was something. Well, nonetheless, it's July 18th, 2018, and this is OneRadioNetwork.com. We hold forth here each morning between 9 and 11, sometimes longer, depending, Monday through Friday. Mainly talking about health and healing, nutrition. Fridays, a lot of spiritual fun stuff. And then on Wednesdays, we dabble into the real world of money, geopolitics, how it's inextricably tied together. And because you listen to One Radio Network, then you're probably going to live a long time, and then you don't want to outlive your money, because that could be like, you know, you'd be living in your, you know, your kid's basement, like they're living in yours now. Does it work like that, Andrew? So you get to go into your basement if they're living in yours? Is that how they work?
I surely hope so.
you're hoping there's a place for you someday?
I'm hoping there's a basement somewhere for me.
That's right.
Good morning, Patrick.
Good morning, Andrew Goss. Oh, my goodness. Andrew Goss is now talking about doing a kidney cleanse, and he's on his sulfur, and he's doing his blood pressure stuff.
What you've done to me.
I don't know what, you know, you just
It's good to feel 25 again.
You just may live a long time, kid. You might outlive your money. You better buy some gold coins or something.
Hey, and I know a guy.
You know a guy?
Fortunate thing.
Really?
I know a guy.
You could do that? Really?
Huh? That's going to be the big thing, by the way, knowing a guy, you know.
Really? So what do you think if you were in a gold and silver monster, what do you... They're doing some work across. Better close the thing anyway. What do you think you'd be investing in? I mean, what would be your number two thing? Mm-hmm. I'm going to go close the window.
Yeah, sure. Number two. Man, everything just seems so dangerous now. Equities being where they are, majority of that driven by buybacks and anticipation of future earnings. You know, 150 times earnings is an awful lot to pay for something. Real estate's... looking like a decent place to put money again, but that's a basic supply and demand market that can be heavily affected by the interest rate environment. Now, Jerome Powell was on TV yesterday telling us, don't worry, inflation is good. Not to worry, the Fed has got this under control. They want to see a little inflation, and we're bragging about it.
I think our One Radio Network microphones were there. Here's what he said. You know, just a clip, real short clip here. Mm-hmm. And then here is Jerome.
Well, Fed Chairman Jerome Powell telling Congress that he thinks the best strategy for the Fed is to continue gradually raising interest rates. In his semi-annual testimony to Congress, Powell gave a solid outlook for the U.S. economy, saying the job market is strong, unemployment will fall further, and inflation has more or less hit the Fed's 2% target. Yeah. And he said wages were not rising fast enough yet to cause an inflation concern.
Not yet.
I think gradually raising rates is the way for us to extend this expansion. Nothing hurts working families and people at the margin of the labor markets more than a recession.
Yeah, well, you see, I mean, that makes sense to me. Do you think, what did these guys do? Just sit there and stare at their computer all day or just go to lunch? I mean, what would they do?
Well, I'm certain they're not in the real world. I'm certain of that. They're inside their bubble in the Beltway.
Bubble.
Yeah, you know, they look at their numbers. Everything. We don't have a thing to worry about. Whistling past the graveyard. Unemployment is so severe. On the opposite, full employment, I should say, is so severe that here on Hilton Head, restaurants are closing. They're forcing themselves to look at whether or not they can hire qualified help in order to open. So the types of things you never used to have to worry about as a business person, can you find help? That's just infecting every segment of the American economy.
You know, they got this.
Now, remember we talked about
you know, that's, you know, doing stuff, and, you know, he's the problem. You know, I would just change him.
Well, we'll get another chance at that.
Let's get rid of him, you know.
Yeah, we'll get another chance to do that.
Well,
certainly heard.
You could just
criticism.
Open the borders and just let people in. You'd have more workers.
Well, that would reduce the unemployment rate there, wouldn't it?
What do you think, man? Just open them up.
Well, amen. How many of those people would work off the books? And, well, I don't know. Okay. The Social Security Trust Fund might not benefit from that sort of activity. And remember, we're in terrible, terrible trouble with the Social Security Trust Fund. So,
but do not
under the table employment is not going to help.
Oh,
that.
I see. But in many cases, I remember back in the when the 80s, when I had a food company, they would come to me with their little I-9 filled out, and they had a
fake
faux Social Security account. So we took stuff out of their check. But I knew
put it in the faux
deep in my heart of Texas, even though, you know, that they wasn't.
They had no proof.
They had no proof, so it wasn't my job to, you know, go to their house and look in their drawers as the NSA. I mean, excuse me. you know what I'm saying? So,
well, that's true. So then I do know what you're saying.
They would put that, and I don't know how much of that goes on. Do you think a lot of that goes on?
Well, I think a lot more goes on that they're simply paid in cash off the books under the table.
Yeah.
I would say that's a greater preponderance of how you would employ an illegal alien into your workforce. You'd have to necessarily pay them off the books.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Unless there's some sort of federal guest worker program.
Guest worker program. But, I mean, you can just imagine how many checks are written daily to people cleaning somebody's house, you know, or cutting their grass, that kind of thing. Nobody.
Well, the
nobody
media
writes
has pointed
that
out.
I mean, no,
a great number of these types of foreign folk are employed by our president at his golf course.
Of course,
right? And so, but you see, the Trump Organization did it within the law. You get an H-1B, I believe it is. Visa.
Oh, you can do it legally.
So if you're legally engaged in that sort of thing, then I think it's good for both communities. You know, those people that want to come in, find themselves a sponsor that would give them employment if they come here, and then give them some sort of permit or something to allow them to make contributions and set regulations in place. So I think that it would be better for the United States, and certainly for the Social Security Trust Fund. The idea of just throwing the borders open and letting people come in and work with less than legal status is not a great solution to the problem. Although, you know, there are those who feel that's one of the reasons why we should, and I just disagree.
Yeah, so they still have this big program where you can bring a bunch of people in from India and China, who are real geeks, right, and do high-tech stuff, right? And there's a whole program for that. And there's a lot of that goes on.
Well, right? Sure.
Because these folks got this geeky brain, don't they, for saying that kind of stuff?
Well, they're trained for that sort of thing. So, of course, training our workforce is something that's very critical if we're going to succeed.
Well, see, we don't do that in this country. We train people in college, like the guys, to not to be so masculine, you know, that kind of stuff. Because
I know.
You see what I mean? It's more important than learning how to do something.
I know that
they have a course in the University of Texas, how not to be so masculine. Do you see that?
Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
No,
I'm cereal.
Thank
you. I'm gluten-free cereal, man.
A course on, you know, how to run a milling machine, that might be workable. You know, that could be something we could teach people to do. But this sort of technical training is absent. Largely, and I hope we fix it. So, and I think we will.
Well, there's still trade schools, though. Can't you go to a school to be a plumber or whatever these days?
You should be able to do that. You know, in Germany, for example, the universities interact directly with the corporations to find out what do you need from our students, right? And so, that's lacking here. We feel we give our students a broad and liberal education, and then send them out and hope they know how to change a tire.
Andrew Goss is with us every Wednesday. He's a currency historian. He's a nationally recognized one of that. The only really radio he does that these days is One Radio Network, so that's pretty cool. And we have just mountains of shows, 10 years worth of shows. He's working on his third book, the Monetary History of the United States, right? Secret World of Money and Uncle Sam Cooks. The books are the first two. He's an entrepreneur. He has buys and sells gold coins for a living. He has a little business that he's involved in with growing food, and he's taking care
of delivery.
Delivery of food. He has a family, and he's a granddad, and then he has about 12 other businesses he didn't tell us. And then he also is heavily involved with politics and working, just finished a documentary film, and that's the reason he has high blood pressure. So we help Andrew to get it out of his. I think the entrepreneurship is in your DNA. See, Andrew, that's where it is.
Well, you know what I'm saying? I can't stand not doing something. The idea of just sitting and not doing something, I don't know. It seems like a waste of time.
So I'm giving Andrew these ideas to lower blood pressure and say you can sit and close your eyes and take these deep breaths. And, you know, it was tough, doing it for 2 minutes because he had to do something.
I can't. I got to do something.
I can't do that, really. I've got to do this.
Yeah.
I got to do that. I got to save the
Another
world.
Another dear, sweet client suggested meditation.
Meditation.
You need to meditate, Andy.
Yeah, good luck with
splash
that.
Splash a little cold water on your face and then spend about 20 minutes.
I mean, it would be good. You know, it would be good.
I'm sure it would, but how could I? Halfway through the 20 minutes, I say, well, give me a box of Morgans. I can at least sort that while I'm sitting here.
I can sort these coins while I'm doing it.
Yeah, well, we have so many coins, I can't even begin to...
How come you got so many coins? What's the deal?
Because I love to buy them. I would rather have coins than money. That's the way I look at it.
Coins are money.
I'll even take somebody else's money, borrow money on my credit cards to buy coins.
You wouldn't.
I do it all the time.
You're such a rascal.
All the time.
Well,
I don't care.
If you have a limited supply of something, then why wouldn't you just keep buying it?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I don't know anything about the business, but that's what I would do.
limited and fixed, in fact. And the demand, well, goodness gracious. Now, I'm not speaking of bars of gold and blocks of gold.
Oh, man, I want some
silver bars and things like that. In fact, there are plenty of guys and gals out there that'll sell you those. But our guys and gals focus on American coins, primarily minted between 1792 when the mint opened and 1933 when the American destroyer severed us from the gold standard. Actually, 1971 it was official, but Roosevelt did close the banks and recall gold. It no longer belonged to you. Now it belongs to the federal government, and here's your $20 an ounce. Thanks for playing. And as you walked around with your $20 bill and suddenly saw prices doubling and tripling, and the official price of gold went to $35 an ounce and stayed there for 40 years. During that whole period where it was illegal for an American to own a bar of gold, you could sell a $20 gold piece to the Attorney General on the steps of the Supreme Court. It was perfectly legal to buy and sell American money. So this is what we deal in exclusively.
Money.
If you're looking for Krugerrands and Maple Leafs and bars, go find somebody else. We're not your firm. But if you're looking for American monetary history, that's where you'll find it, right here at SDL.
Well, I can remember people after they closed, they got back the gold and then raised the prices, you know.
I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in here. You win, sir. Oh, thank you very much. Everybody out at once.
It was a terrible thing that happened.
Yeah, but we shouldn't all be gambling. See, when we put money in the bank, and we've been doing that increasingly over the last decade, if we put money in the bank, we're saying, we don't want to gamble with this. We want to put this aside for our future. And for the government to allow that to be thwarted by a privately owned banking cartel that raises or lowers the amount of money in circulation to meet its political goals, I'm out. I can't participate in that. And as long as that's the way it's going to be done, then I'll continue to pile my money into American constitutional money, what the Constitution defines as money.
So just
I get it.
Yeah, just the idea that the cartel, which the Federal Reserve of New York, right?
The Federal Reserve banking system is a cartel of private banks. It is not in any way owned or controlled by the federal government, although the federal government gets a huge kickback every year that allows them to continue to do what they do. I mean, U.S. government spending is $4.4 trillion. It's ridiculous. We only bring in 3.4. Where's that other trillion coming from? And it's not coming from your savings, folks. You're not buying treasury bonds and treasury bills. That's the Federal Reserve banking cartel. They simply create the money and loan it to the federal government. Talk about an incestuous relationship.
The one we love, collected $1.3 trillion in individual income taxes through the first 9 months of fiscal 2018. Yep. That would be through June of 18 days ago, according to the Treasury statement. And, oops, wait a minute, something wrong here. Federal government ran a deficit of $607 billion over those same 9 months, according to the Treasury statement. So, about $600 billion in the red.
And a half. In a half.
In a half of the year, yeah. So there you go. There's your
1.2. Wow. There's your extra job.
Numbers. Isn't math great when you look at it and say, well,
oh, no, yeah. Don't look at math.
1.2 in the hole, right?
Yeah, but to remember the truth, if as long as we don't run out of zeros,
I know.
We could just keep making those numbers bigger and bigger. So what's our total worldwide dollar-denominated debt? Double since 2008. What's our total savings of money in the bank? Double since 2008. So how do we continue? We simply keep adding money to the pile. And, well, unfortunately.
Keep borrowing money from the private Fed, right?
Unfortunately, that's right.
That's what
they do. The debt pile has gotten bigger, too. Yeah. You know, we, that's the point. If you raise it all simultaneously, then it almost disappears from the public psyche. I mean, do you notice when you go to the store the price is about 10 cents higher than it was a week before? No. It just kind of slides by, especially when you're using electronic money, which is 96% of all transactions now are conducted without anyone ever laying their hands on physical money.
So the way our
founders intended it, Patrick, we're supposed to see the money shrink whenever they change the standard.
What?
So Congress would get together and say, okay, we want to make the dollar a little smaller. They have to pass a law that has to be signed by the president, and then it's public knowledge. Everybody knows. Well, a silver dollar isn't an ounce of silver anymore. Now it's only a half ounce. Now, in doing that, they do not affect the silver dollars that you put away when they were twice as big.
Because you still have those, right?
You still have those. You have them saved, so you know that they're still worth, well, now they're worth twice as much as the current ones.
Mm-hmm.
When they change the value of the dollar today, they do so without public input, without you knowing that it's being done. And if you think about it, that you remember that spurious quote by Thomas Jefferson, if the American people ever allow the banks to control the issue of their currency, first by inflation, then by deflation, they will deprive the people of all property. That's like, oh, if only Jefferson really said that. It was so prescient. But that's what's going on now. So when they vary the amount of money in circulation, they either raise it or lower it, then that's what causes prices to rise, et cetera. And that's what we're witnessing
now. So just for 2018, when you go 607B in the red for the first part, that money's got to come from somewhere. And generally, it could be a lot of that, could be new money. So certainly some of it is,
you borrow it from
people, or so it's not really new money at that point, right? That's not inflationary.
No,
the Fed owns how many trillion?
Well, let's look at that.
Couple trillion.
It's like, what is it today? It is 4.2 trillion in various treasury and mortgage-backed obligations. Broken up how? $2.3 trillion in federal. $2 trillion in mortgage-backed securities, and a bunch of change in these Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and so forth. Change, I say, as Everett Dirksen used to say, a billion here, a billion there. Pretty soon, you're talking real money. But that's what the Fed holds: $4.2 trillion worth of debt. About half of it, based on bogus instruments in the case of those mortgage-backed securities.
So you're looking at the latest one, which is July 5, 2018.
I think it is.
Yeah, something like that.
No, I have July 12.
Oh, I don't know how you got that one. I don't have that one. How do you get the newest, latest one?
Just go back to the link, and there it'll be.
Back to the link.
I see it. To that week, and so.
Oh, I see. Yeah, July 12. I got it. Yeah. 4.25. They got there in their balance sheet. That's the Federal Reserve Bank of New York.
Four and a quarter $6 trillion in debt instruments,
mm-hmm.
against which they simply created $4.2 trillion and exchanged them within the system. So it was like, you're holding $4.2 trillion worth of bonds. Okay, give them to us. We'll create $4 trillion and give it to you. And so by doing this, they freed up the gears of the system. Do you remember what happened in 2008 when the credit markets froze? What does that mean, they froze? Well, it means you couldn't borrow a dime. You couldn't. I mean, it was a horrific period because everyone was holding debt and no money. And now, guess where we are now? Guess where we find ourselves back in the same situation where everyone's holding debt and there's a liquidity crunch. And this is when the Fed decides that they're going to run off their balance sheet. They're going to allow these securities to mature and not buy new ones. This is purely political and nothing else. Hmm. It certainly doesn't make economic sense.
Well, no. Really? It's Andrew Gossett, Patrick Timpone, OneRadioNetwork.com. If you'd like to be on the show, we have a lot of time this morning. I have so many tabs open, my computer doesn't even want to work anymore, but it'll work. So come on and join us, 888-663-6386. Email Patrick at OneRadioNetwork.com. I think I kind of figured out why when we eat sulfur that we can easier more remember the dreams. It was like the most obvious thing in the world that I just really... It was kind of the Occam's razor thing where usually the most simplest direct solution is the thing. And I just kind of missed the piece because I just couldn't get my head around it, literally. But here's a little thing on it. I had my big two teaspoons this morning. That's what I had this morning.
Hey, Patrick. Peter from Rhode Island. How you doing?
Rhode Island, is that state up there in the northeast?
I was off the sulfur for a while because I was traveling, and I just fell away from it. And then for the past 3 or 4 days, I've been taking it again, and my dreams are, like, through the roof. It's sort of like I can't wait to fall asleep to dream. It's just crazy dreams. I mean, they're all sort of creative and wonderful, but the vivid dreams are just, I'd forgotten how vivid, you know, your dreams are when you're taking this stuff. And I hadn't been for... I don't know, 2 weeks or something like that, and then all of a sudden, for the past 3 days, I've been taking it again, and it's just like, whoa, that's cool. I really enjoy it, so.
That's great. Now, we can't guarantee that your dream experiences, which we believe are real as this, are going to be fun, creative, vivid, and all the rest of it like Peter, but even if it does nothing else, sulfur, and we know it does, understanding your dreams and remembering them more clearly would be worth the price of admission. You can click and order Pure Organic Sulfur right here on OneRadioNetwork.com. So what I finally just, it dawned on me the other day. I said, well, of course. I mean, when you come back in your body, you know, the mind is not a physical thing. The mind is a mental, other than physical thing. That's what the mind is. But the brain, you know, everything goes from the mind to the brain, and we need the brain when we're back in our body to actually remember stuff. Do you know what I mean, Jelly Bean? Well, not totally, because you got past life stuff that you can remember without the brain, but that gets too complicated. But generally, you know, so the sulfur obviously is bringing, I don't say obviously, I'm just making this up, I don't know. I just make it up as I go along. You just get more energy, more circulation, more... The key here, oxygen, which is what sulfur does. And then folks have brighter or more dream experiences than they've had before. I've known people who said, well, I never dream, and I took sulfur, and then I dream. Well, they just never remembered them. So that's one of the reasons why the sulfur does it. I'm glad I figured it out, because it was a dumb, one of like those moments like, duh. Previously, with our friend Brandon Amalani of Shen Blossom.
A good example of this also is like the Hoshu Wu formula.
Hmm.
That is, that's a new one that came out. It's really good because it's a blood builder. A lot of people don't understand that Hoshu Wu is actually toxic if it's not prepared correctly. So I wanted to come out with one that not only features the Hoshu Wu as the king herb in the formula, but it's prepared of a minimum of 14 days. Usually we try and get 20, 21 days of cooking it. So you can think of it as like it's in a slow cooker with black beans.
Huh.
And it's basically just cooking down and deactivating some of those liver toxic compounds. So we do use that as like the bulk of the formula, but we basically put a lot of like mature ginseng root, like in our root extract. We have the fermented and hydrolyzed pearl powder, reishi stem. And it's got shu di hong, which is like a Romania type family. We got both the prepared warm stuff and then the cool stuff to kind of balance it out in a sense so it doesn't become sticky. If you get a good quality hoshu that's properly prepared, it definitely has some invigorating qualities to it and makes you feel relaxed, but yet fully vigorous and energized.
Now, that's the kind of hoshu that you would like, right? Really nice products, as you can hear. If you'd like to order hoshu or the other products, click on Shen Blossom right there on the front page. OneRadioNetwork.com. And the Hoshi Wu is one of the all-time great kidney liver elixirs from Chinese medicine. You could probably do that every day for the rest of your life, and your kidney would say, thank you very much. Don't forget, we have the ongoing bounce into or jump into whatever it is, sale on rebounders. The $339 price, generally just for a half fold during the sale, will get you the ultimate rebounder. Go to reboundair.com. And look at the ultimate quarterfold. If you'd like to own one of them, they sell them for $429 retail. And you can get it now today for $339. Or we shoot you the half fold for, what did we say it was? $299. So just email me if you want to get the quarterfold or the ultimate or the half fold. Again, look on reboundair.com. You can see what the quarterfold looks like. We generally sell mostly half folds. But for me, because we're friends here, I would, if you got the 339 and you want to exchange 339 Federal Reserve notes for the quarterfold, the ultimate, it's really, yeah, it's the top of the line. It's kind of like a BMW thing, and you might as well get it if you're going to use it for the next 25 years. So the rebounder sale going on right now, just email me, and I'll work it out with you, OneRadioNetwork.com.
Good morning. Good morning. This is OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email patrick at oneradionetwork.com. Here's your host, Patrick Timpone.
Well, as you know, geopolitics and money and the value of the dollar and you're investing in gold coins and all that stuff and is inextricably tied to geopolitics. Is it what it, that's a fair statement, right, Andrew Goss?
Well, sure. Yeah, absolutely.
It just is, right?
Because outside forces, yes.
Outside forces. We, we've talked a lot about the first, year and a half of President Trump's visit to the White House. Mm-hmm. I think he leaves every now and then because he's got a better spot in Florida, but that's okay. Anyway, I'm just being silly. So we had F. William Engdahl on the show yesterday.
Yes.
Now, F. William is really quite an interesting man. He's been at this geopolitical analysis for many years. I think he has 10 books. His latest book is called Manifest Destiny, Democracy and the Cognitive Dissonance, where the idea of, you know, war is peace and, you know, freedom is, you know, freedom is...
Doublethink.
But so we had quite an interesting conversation about the president, about Russia and the globalist and... You know, he's certainly into the globalist thing. Now, his take, which is a bit different from what you and I have been musing about, is that he believes, and I want to get your take on this, he believes that the globalists are actually very well pleased with President Trump because he says that you just can't get in this job unless they allow you to. Which is his opinion, that it wasn't a mistake, you know, that they wanted him rather than Hillary because the president would be more of a bulldog against China, Russia with the tariffs, North Korea, Iran. And according to F. William, the boys, you know, who we call the boys, the Dollar Inc. people, with their whole main focus is they're concerned about, according to Engdahl, Russia, China, and Iran. That's their big concern because they don't control these guys. Mm-hmm. And so he says that this whole thing with they're allowing this to go on because it's really good for them to be able to split the country, you know, into fighting with each other, which makes sense in a sense.
Been done before.
Now, I'm still kind of naive like you are, and I kind of hope...
want him to be good, I know.
That, I kind of hope that President Trump really is, you know, on some level, is the real
deal. But he
deal.
Has to compromise. But I know he
has
to compromise.
He does.
He has to.
He does.
Otherwise, I mean, sure, if he could just, like, blank slate his agenda right through.
No.
He could do like Roosevelt did, you know, take over as a dictator. This thing is so bad, I'm going to just take over.
Well, that's what Ignal said, because because the globalists, of course, they love open borders, right, for many, many reasons, as you've told us. So I asked Mr. Ignal, so, well, how can they allow the president to be so hardcore if he's, you know, if he's a globalist puppet, as you're saying, or maybe mini puppet or part-time puppet? How would they allow this part-time puppet? I like it. Why would they allow this whole border thing to happen, Mr. Ingda? He said, well, there are factions within, as you're saying, you know, so it's not a perfect world where they get everything they want, but
as long as they advance their agenda.
That's what Ingda was saying.
Yeah. No, I wholeheartedly agree.
Yeah.
I have no doubt, and I knew from the beginning that, you know, Mr. Trump is facing a formidable challenge here, and that there is no doubt that he's going to have to compromise.
He must be getting pushed and pulled from all.
Oh, goodness. Whew, yeah.
Man.
Sure.
Yeah.
While trying to keep in sight what might be best for you and me.
Yeah,
and,
right.
You know, the rest of America.
I really believe, you know, again, I may just be my naivete, but I really believe that he wants to make America great again.
There you go.
I mean, I really believe that.
Yeah,
I could be wrong.
That's my naivete right there.
Yeah, I could be wrong.
I know.
I've been wrong before, so don't go by me.
Yeah, right.
What I'm saying.
I stick with what I know, and that'll make me happy, because what I know is, you know, mintages of coins and how many are there and what the general consensus is when it relates to our money.
Right. Well.
So, The globalists certainly have the same concern. You know, it's the one thing that links us all. Whether you're a nationalist or a globalist, the dollar is very important. And I think, you know, given the circumstances, as you mentioned, China, Russia, and Iran, throw in a few other players in there, and you could have a revolt against Dollar Inc. So, you know, they need to go along as well. They can't just act like, well, we talked about the velvet glove coming off the iron fist, right?
Right.
When you have complete supreme power and you're not worried about anything, you do what you want. So I don't think either side has that advantage now, and so they have to necessarily work with the other.
Mr. Engdahl suggests that the Iran thing is mostly about keeping the price of oil up, right?
Yep.
And even though, you know, the president might say gas prices and all that stuff, they need the price of oil up if they want to do the shale thing, he said.
Right.
But, you know, he had an interesting take, too, Andrew, on the shale. And he suggested, and he's got a lot of contacts and a lot of research, that the whole shale thing is it's being touted as being a whole lot bigger and more more legs than what they really have, that they're getting all the juicy, easy stuff now.
Right.
He doesn't think it's going to last as long as everybody thinks it's going to last.
And I don't either.
Do you agree?
But again, I'm not an oil expert.
Yeah, of course. So yeah. And he is, because he writes oil.
Yeah.
He's got a whole book called Oil Wars and whatever.
Yeah. It's a supply and demand market like anything else. So that's the only things that'll, you know, you look at the supply of oil and the demand for oil, and that's really what drives the price.
And the shale people say they're going to do about 10 million barrels a day at the beginning of next year. So, you know, that's considerable. He also talked about, let's see, I asked him about how big a deal is it that China owns their own central bank.
Right? Oh, it owns their own.
Oh, yeah. He said, well, that's a very big deal, Patrick. I'm glad he got that one, you know. Well, of course, how could you not, you know?
How could you not, yeah.
And he said they're investing, because he visits China. He's been there about 15 times. And
I've been there never.
Yeah, I know. Who has, you know, you and I? Mm-hmm. But he said they're pretty clever. He said they do a lot of dumb things, just like any governments do. But he said they're doing a lot of infrastructure that people don't know about to keep these billion and a half people, you know, from revolting. And, you know,
a lesson we should take.
Yeah. And they get to print yuan themselves, right, and not borrow it, unlike us. and do their infrastructure stuff. And
yeah, and that causes them to do some stuff that would be viewed as not.
Oh, sure. They've made a lot of nothing cities that we talked about.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
What else did he say?
But overall, it's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He said that he has read those 12 indictments, you know, that came out, what, day before the Putin meeting.
Uh-huh.
He said they're all nothing burgers. He said there's nothing there. They're all. You know, you can indict anybody and accuse them of anything.
Ham sandwiches.
They're not even kosher. You know, ham sandwiches. Right. Also, mm-hmm. he, you know, it was kind of laughable to him about this whole Russian meddling thing, because then he talked a bit about the CIA with Ukraine. You know, I mean, can you imagine,
yeah.
Mr. Putin?
CIA,
I mean, what he
Venezuela.
Thinks about this?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
sure.
Come on. I mean, he knows the CIA was into Crimea and all that stuff. Mm. I mean, Putin's not stupid. And here's the United States in there, you know.
How dare you?
Check this out. No, I just pulled this up just for fun. You know, if you don't think the United States, okay. Here's a telephone call between Secretary of State Victoria Nuland and the U.S. Ambassador to Ukraine, Jeffrey Pratt, okay? This is somebody got this phone call. They got it off from the NSA. So check this out. I mean, you know, this is February 14th, 2014.
What do you think?
I think we're in play. The Klitschko piece is obviously the complicated electron here, especially the announcement of him as deputy prime minister. And you've seen some of my notes on the troubles in the marriage right now, so we're trying to get a read really fast on where he is on this stuff. But I think your argument to him, which you'll need to make, I think that's the next phone call we want to set up, is exactly the one you made to Yats. And I'm glad you sort of put him on the spot on where he fits in this scenario. And I'm very glad he said what he said in response.
Good. So I don't think Cleet should go into the government. I don't think it's necessary. I don't think it's a good idea.
The government of what?
Yeah, I mean, I guess...
This is terrible.
You think, what, in terms of him not going into the government, just let him sort of stay out and do his political homework and stuff. I'm just thinking, in terms of sort of the process moving ahead, we want to keep the moderate Democrats together. The problem is going to be Tanibok and his guys. And, you know, I'm sure that's part of what Yanukovych is calculating on all of this.
I think Yats is the guy who's got the economic experience, the governing experience. He's the guy, you know, what he needs is Cleach and Tanibok on the outside. He needs to be talking to them four times a week, you know.
Now, this is the Assistant Secretary talking about another government. I mean, they're...
Another country. Yeah, like...
But that's not meddling. That wouldn't be meddling. Just kidding. I know. It's like, you know, and Putin knows
and,
this stuff.
Well,
you know.
I've been debating this quite a bit, and I put into play the following scenario.
Hilarious.
So what if the Russian government bought a bunch of ads on Facebook
or what have you?
Yeah. Well, I mean, what? What's the big deal there? If this phone call that we just listened to, if it was being conducted with Donald Trump and Putin, then yeah, I would be right there with you and let's impeach this guy.
Oh, I see what
you're
saying. Yeah.
I would have to agree. Hey, here's
but Obama
you know, here's
probably
a,
didn't know about this. Oh, he could. You know, I don't know if he did.
He didn't know about it.
Well, I don't.
Okay.
Know. Oh, I, well, I'm, that was a little silly. But he wasn't in on the conversation. It wasn't a three-way.
No, but the idea that these people did all this without some kind of direction from
above. Oh, I see what you're saying, yeah.
You know, I find that hard to believe.
Mm-hmm.
That they took it upon themselves to get this involved in a Ukrainian election? No, I think they had some marching orders. And I think that would be too far. If anything like that with Mr. Trump's voice surfaces on it, I would be on the other side of the camp.
Would you?
Or if someone from within... Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, now I think you've gone too far. If you conspire with foreign nationalists to change something about our government, I think you've gone too far.
Well, this conversation was with the ambassador to Ukraine, right?
I know.
It's putting in the guy they wanted. I mean, that's a lot. You know, that's pretty meddling. You know, I don't...
Yeah, that's kind of meddling. But we've done that since, 1954, right? I mean, that's...
What was the first one, 54?
Documented the Iranian...
that's right, the Shah of Iran.
Toss, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's another thing that Mr. Engdahl said. He thinks very clearly that regime change in Iran is on the books. You know, this is what they want to do. You know,
they could do whatever they want over there, as far as I'm concerned. You know, I'm in the United States. I'm concerned about this country. I think that's where Mr. Trump's heart is, too. We have really big problems here in the United States financially that we really need to focus on. And I'm still curious to hear, what did Ingdahl think of the $1.2 trillion that China's holding in treasury bonds? Was he like dismissive of that?
No, we talked a little bit about that. He suggested they're going to continue to, you know, keep investing.
Yeah,
they're going to
keep buying them. That's
it. Keep buying them, you know.
Because they need to do that in order to keep the dollar alive.
And he believes that China is a real long-term planner.
Partner.
You know,
partner.
Kind of thinker. And they're not going to do anything really dumb and just kind of eat away at us. And that probably makes sense, right?
You know, well,
sure. Yeah. They would like
to
have
to me.
They would like to have the yuan as the world's reserve currency, wouldn't they?
At some point, I'm sure that would be a dream for them, because they, again, own their own central bank. Mm-hmm. So, that get the whole world using yuan, storing yuan, acting as if the yuan is the supreme currency. That's the dollar's position right now. Mm-hmm. And all of this strength in the dollar that you see lately, when there's a flight to quality, as people worry about the other currencies and they flood into the dollar. But with all the strength that the dollar's exhibiting, we're at 95.
Yeah, I know. It's huge, right?
Right? We started the year at 88. So I'm sure the chart guys are going absolutely wild. If you look at the chart pattern of the U.S. dollar index, you see that classic head and shoulders top, you know, where we've kind of been peakier, and now we're setting the second shoulder right now, if you look at the chart. And those always portend a sharp move to the opposite, which is the downside. And believe me, if I look at the price of gold and the price of silver, they're an absolute bargain at these levels.
They really are. $1,250, something like that, or even
No,
more,
I
right?
think it's 1230, maybe. 30. I haven't checked
it's
this
still,
morning.
I
but
look. Let me look.
Yeah, but this means you can buy semi-numismatic coins. Of course, to me, numismatic coins, you buy them when you find them. But you don't stop buying because there are no numismatic coins available, or good ones anyway. If you load up on the semi-numismatic coins, where the price of metal is the bulk of their value, and so when gold goes down, they're cheaper. When gold goes up, they're more expensive. Add the premium in either way. So to me, right now, I think $20 gold pieces, the big 1 ounce gold pieces, which are the bread and butter of anyone's portfolio, should be accumulated. That's when you want to buy them, on the dips. So if you're in a dollar averaging program, which you should be, dollar cost averaging into and out of the numismatic and semi-numismatic market, now's the time to buy those bulk items, the, you know, MS62 through 64 $20 gold pieces, the silver dollars, even the modern ones that Reagan put out in 84, 85, 6, those are fantastic buys at these levels, because their value is largely based on their silver or on their gold content, which is historically low. So you don't get that much of a break. I mean, we're really only back to October 2017 levels. But, you know, that's if you missed some this year, that would be a good time to buy right now.
1223, I'm sorry. 1223 gold, 1540 for silver. It's amazing. This old sliver, man, it's just been
absolute
hanging out
steel
at this level for, I don't how many, what, 5 years
I remember
or so?
But I remember when it was $4, when it was $3.
Yeah,
bucks.
That's true,
come
too.
On.
It's hard to remember that.
Yeah. If you are accumulating, which you should be, through your lifetime, you know, that's how you buy gold and silver coins. You kind of build a pile. That's the idea.
Yeah, but what if
there's
we
gonna
never started to accumulate? You can start now?
Well, we got to catch up. So maybe you go crazy for a couple of years and then settle into
juice
a program.
Juice it up a little bit, yeah.
Yeah. But you know, the reality is that it's like a slow-moving train. You know, as I've made this analogy for folks before, it's like watching the grass grow. You know, if you want some speculative, exciting opportunities, there's a world full of those. You can go out there and, man, I've seen some risky investments that can be very rewarding.
You could buy some BitChumps.
Whatever.
That's my new name for it, BitChump.
Yeah, BitJunk. Well, Coinbase withdrew that press announcement. You remember the press announcement that was, we've got regulatory approval, we're going to be listed. And then today it's like, oh, never mind. I guess we don't really have regulatory approval.
Anyway,
those speculative type investments.
A lot of those.
A lot of risk, a lot of reward. Boy, you could just knock it out of the park with those.
Mm-hmm.
I can't participate. I can't tell you there's a coin you should buy today that's going to double tomorrow. It's just not happening, okay? But it is like watching the grass grow. Very slow. But if you go on vacation and come back after 2 weeks, your grass is ridiculously high. You almost have to get out the weed whacker. And that's the beauty of this investment. If you buy coins and just put them away, you don't wait to buy coins, right? You buy them and wait. It's not a speculative type of thing. I'm gonna buy today with the hope that they're going to zoom in price in the next 6 months or year. Forget it. Accumulate a little bit each year. Make a pile. Because believe it or not, and I know I'm finding it hard to believe now, but there's going to come a time where you can't work anymore. It's not a choice. You just can't do it. You're not physically or mentally.
Maybe you don't want to is another thing.
But can't is quite a real possibility for a great many Americans. And at that point, when you can't work anymore and can't earn any more money in that fashion, then you're forced to live on what you already have. And that, my friends, is the time when you dip back into your gold and silver coin hoard and supplement your existence. That's the idea.
Let me ask, if you're correct and the dollar is going to continue to be worthless.
So
let's say 20 years from now, I just kind of run out of stuff, so I need to sell some coins So aren't I going to get some stinking Federal Reserve notes that are worth so much more less money that I don't even want to give away those coins, but I have to because I got to buy something,
store.
Right?
You got to buy something, whatever it might be.
And you can't take a $20 gold piece to the HEB. Well, you could, but you don't want to do
even,
that.
Even at current levels, though, I have clients that bought $20 gold pieces in 1986, 87, 88. I even have clients that bought them in the mid and late 90s that are finding themselves unable to work. And so they have to sell. Even at these low gold prices, a coin that you bought in 1995 and it was $450, you're selling today at $1,300 or $1,400. So
it all works out, kind of, sort of.
That's the point. Now, granted, if you would have sold it when it was $1,900, you might have been better off. You would have gotten a lot more for your coins. And this is another reason why I say, you know, don't speculate. Don't wait until you hear on the nightly news every night, it's up 100, up 100. I mean, I was like, oh, Marge, we need to buy some gold. Let's sell the entire stock portfolio and buy gold. No, it's not how you want to do it. Just average in. Just a little chip, you know, pretty soon you're looking and that pile is just getting bigger and bigger. If you need it in your lifetime, you can always turn it back into whatever the coin of the realm is, whether it's Federal Reserve notes or yuan, whatever it is, you'll be able to convert it.
Or BitChumps. You could buy BitChumps.
Whatever, yeah.
Sure. BitChumps. Like some of those. Here's an email for you, Andy. I just got to know who's buying dollars and who's selling gold. The metals are down like a rock in the pond. Seems to me someone's getting ready to put the screws to somebody. I know it ain't me because I ain't got much of either one. By the way, the immortal words of Chris Christopherson, freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose. Nothing ain't worth nothing, but it's free.
That's right.
That's a great song. Freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose. So, yeah, who's buying dollars? Is it still just the cleanest dirty shirt in the...
Well, everyone and their Aunt Susie is buying dollars because dollars are, you know, they're strong. Boy, they're going up. That's the favorite trade right now. But if you look at the commitment of traders, what it has taken to drive gold and silver to their current levels is remarkable.
What do you mean? Explain that to me a little bit.
Well, in order to make gold go down, there has to be more sellers than there are buyers.
Right.
Just that simple.
Right.
So the short market, the futures market, where I can sell options and contracts and things like that has been very robust. And, you know, usually when everyone is long, meaning everyone is committed to owning gold, then the gold prices are set up for a fall. And when everyone is short, then they're set up for a rise. It's kind of, it's almost, you know, they say the market is never wrong, but it seems to be, it's always wrong, and that pendulum swings. So the Commitment of Traders report, which you can get, I mean, it's not ridiculously hard to get your hands on if you really want to learn. It shows you that the gold in the metals market in general right now, in gold and certainly in silver and copper and palladium and platinum, short interest is at a long, the long holdings are not there. The short interest is. So the commercials, the large speculators, even the small speculators have shorted this market dramatically. Gold, silver, copper, platinum, and palladium. And if I were a paper trading guy, I would look at that and say, oh my goodness, you know, that's, the market is wrong again. I'm going to get on the opposite side, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So it seems to me that there's an inordinate amount of short selling in the gold and silver market. It has been for goodness, months now. It's almost like it was an orchestrated thing, you know. Everyone's playing off the same page book, much the way the newscasters do. Mm-hmm. This is another beautiful thing, by the way, about the coin market. You know, I have an 1872 $5 gold piece for sale right now. I wouldn't short this coin for all the money in the world. Well, I mean,
what do you mean you wouldn't short it? You wouldn't,
meaning I wouldn't say to somebody, okay, I'm going to sell you this coin, which I don't have, and set a price, and that's what it's going to cost you to buy it, and then I'm responsible to go out and find it at that price.
That would be shorting.
You see
coin.
What I'm saying?
Yeah,
that
yeah,
would be
yeah.
shorting.
Got it. You don't.
So that does not go on in my market. I mean, I'll hear your interest, but I won't short the coin.
That's all right. We like sirens. They're okay. Gives a
sure
flavor of reality to the show.
We're right on the Seapine Circle here, and I'll tell you, when they decide, they're going.
Yeah, they're going to go.
They
yeah.
go. They go. Don't care. Well, so the point there is that it's a cash and carry market, and supply and demand dictates price. So when I found this 1872 $5, I was fortunate to find it. One of 1,300 made, very scarce.
That's amazing,
coin,
isn't it? 1,300 coins.
Yeah,
and you find
yeah.
one. I mean, that's just nuts.
In prime condition, like it survived that's for nice. You know 145, 150 years. So I listed it in our inventory based on what we paid for the coin. And if I sold it, and then somebody said to me, oh, I'd like to buy one, I'll pay you $1,000 more, I wouldn't take the trade. Why? Because I couldn't find the coin unless I go back to the guy that just bought it and offer him a profit. That's it. And that's the beautiful part of the numismatic market. When you know the populations of a gold coin or a silver coin, how many are existing, how many were made, and how many are graded in what particular grade, this is the type of information that allows you to then decide, okay, this one is a lot rarer than people thought, and this one's a lot more common than people thought, and we use that knowledge. It's not illegal in the coin market. We use that knowledge to accumulate the coins that we think are dramatically undervalued, and then we place them. We offer them with our clients, to our clients, and the idea is you store it, and then at some point, I'm going to want it back. I'll buy it back from you. I know where it is, and so forth. So this is, I don't know, it just seems like the perfect market for me. We've always viewed ourselves as market makers, so we don't care what everybody else is doing. We know the reality of, like someone asked, why are you buying silver commands? Well, because we think they're dramatically undervalued. That's why, if you look at the supplies of those things, people don't even know they exist. It amazes me. A person from Texas, I say, hey, did you know there's a Texas half dollar? No. Or a person from California. Did you know there's a California half dollar? No. Did you know there's a coin, a half dollar coin, with P.T. Barnum on it? This is the type of numismatic history that makes these coins so desirable. I think, you know, given the circumstances, a 50-piece or even better, 144-piece of silver commemoratives struck between 1892 and 1954, it's a lifetime endeavor. But the sum of its parts, man, that pales in comparison to the whole of the collection. You take the time to put together a well-matched set of silver commemoratives, it's going to take a long time. But when you're done, you've got something that's worth more than the sum of what you paid. That's it. It's just like play Monopoly and get all the houses, all the blue, all the green, and so forth.
Fun stuff, brother. And,
sorry.
And that's right.
I go off.
I was kind of.
I love numismatic coins.
I was kind of just waiting. I was looking for a Kim Kardashian coin, but I just couldn't find one.
Yeah, well, good. Modern replicas of coins. I'll tell you, they're everywhere.
Well, you know, the
somebody
stock market.
Somebody sent me a Donald Trump coin, and someone sent me a Bitcoin. It was yes, Andy, there are Bitcoins. I'm like, what? And sure enough, in the mail, I get this round disc of metal with a B on it. You know their symbol.
Mm-hmm.
And what's it made of? Well, it's made out of silver, so it's a silver-backed Bitcoin. All right, I'll take this. You know what it is because you can weigh it. That's what gives it its value.
Mm-hmm. Andrew Goss, Patrick Timpone. If you'd like to talk to Andrew about these kinds of things, like coins, real American money, his phone number is 800-468-2646. 800-468-2646. It is July 18th, 2018. We're going to talk with Scott Tipps tomorrow. Scott's with the National Health Freedom Council, and he wrote me an email, I think last week, said he just got back from the Codex thing, and there's been some pretty good breakthroughs with where Merck is kind of having a hard time, not an easiest time as they would like to get some stuff out there. So we thought that was good news. So we're going to have him on tomorrow. We'll probably have somebody else or have a short day. Only have one person scheduled for tomorrow. We've been getting more and more people that have tried these Living Streams probies that we're just kind of head over feet on. And this fellow wrote in to Wayne yesterday to show you how strong these guys are. If I can find it here, he said, I began the multi-blend, Living Streams multi-blend, 6 days ago. One drop for 3 days, then three drops the next day. And then I really felt like I was coming down with a cold and the flu, sore throat, cloudy head, energy, and also cleansing all sorts out of the colon. I stopped for the moment. Could that be some small initial dosing account for the reaction? Should I continue? Now, isn't that interesting? When's the last time you've done a probiotic from the hippie food store and had a detox reaction? That's because, God love them, you know, I don't speak badly about anybody, but a lot of the stuff in the capsules, the science has shown that they're just not there by the time they go through your, you know, your tummy and all of that. These are the real deal. They have about 14 different ones in our store, and we recommend you do the Living Streams multi-blend, maybe the Bifido, and I also like the L-Sterma Gold, but so many good things to choose from. Flora PM has been shown in anecdotal studies that Wayne has put out with people to truly help ladies with menopause kind of symptoms, things, because it's probably a detoxification thing. Then they have the mold relief. Also the pet probiotics that I've been putting some in Doodle's water too. She seems to like that. And her little things, everything down there is happy. So the doggies have the same kind of a immune system set up as we people do. Just remember that 80% of our immune system is in our gut. So you start getting more of these different probies in there along with various nutrients. I think overall, ongoing, day in and day out, we'll build up an immunity, in my opinion. I'm just making this up, in our gut. That's going to be really, really cool to have 5 years from now. Because if you don't do antibiotics, they're not going to go anywhere. And even if you have to do an antibiotic, if you got hit with some kind of flu or something like that, and you really got to do it just to survive, you could then replenish with these guys. But, you know, that's just another story. Living Streams probiotics, and they're from on One Radio Network in the store. If you'd like to get more information from Marilyn, she's there for you. 360-912-2981. 360-912-2981. If you get some information from her and you want to order some, please go ahead and order through our website. Don't order on the phone because we won't get credit. Just go to our website and order. Or if you'd like to email me, I'd be happy to give you some more information. I'm getting emails about the mold thing, so that's pretty cool. That's Living Streams. Great products.
Starving for vitality, we're turning to energy drinks, stimulants, and pharmaceuticals to try to improve our focus, increase our metabolism, rescue our sex drive, and adapt to the stresses of modern-day living. Each year, an elk sheds its impressive antlers, regenerating an even larger set the following year. These velvet antlers have been a revered traditional medicine for thousands of years. Elk antler harnesses the adaptogenic and highly regenerative growth factors from this natural and ethical resource into a concentrated, bioavailable extraction. Its revitalizing effects span bone, muscle, and nerve support, improve metabolism, cellular repair, sexual potency, anti-inflammation, vascular strengthening, and hormone production. Humanely harvested from free-range U.S. elk, extracted in organic alcohol, and protected in Miron glass, our elk antler is available in three strengths to restore your vitality at any level.
This is the same place where you get colostrum, elk velvet antler, as you heard there, pine pollen, and the shaga and the reishi. It is Sirthrival. Any Sirthrival link on OneRadioNetwork.com. Sirthrival on OneRadioNetwork.com. Whoops, I got to do the right thing here. Okay, it's The Real World of Money with Andrew Goss, Patrick Timpone. Andrew is a currency historian. We talk about money and how it all works and how it's so intertwined with the political stuff. See if we can figure out what the dollar is going to do, what it's not going to do, and what your investments may be worth some years from now. Let's see. Let's go through some of our tabs here. And we're going to do some emails too. So this is kind of good. Chicago may become the largest city in the U.S. to try a universal basic income, UBI.
Sure.
It's going to be
Obama talking about it yesterday.
Yeah, he was
Johannesburg.
Was in Johannesburg, and he was talking about that we really should do this. It came out yesterday too that Mr. Obama, I think he came up with about 20 million while he was in office, so 20 extra. I'm not sure how he did that. Probably some good investments, something like that. So tell us about your opinion why. Fiscally, emotionally, spiritually, financially, a basic income, is it a good idea?
What? No, it's not a good idea.
Well, give us some reasons
why.
Talk
about reducing.
I mean, you could just keep people money and then they're happier and they won't rob banks and stuff. I mean,
where's the productivity going to come from that?
Well, that's because
I get the idea that somehow they're going to think great thoughts. And maybe they'll spend the money that you give them, so that'll be stimulative.
That'd be good.
To those
they buy
that
ding
are still
dongs
working
and stuff, right?
But then, you know, what's working going to do for you if you can just sit home and get money for free? I don't think encouraging that sort of thing makes sense. Now, the idea that you educate someone, teach them a trade, you see, this is the Obama way of thinking. I guess it was teach a man to, or a person to fish, or buy them a fish.
He bought him a
which
fish.
He'd rather buy him a fish than, okay, here, take this, go out there and fish. So it seems to make more sense that we invest that same money into teaching people how to be self-sufficient, how to take care of themselves, and maybe give them a little boost up in that process, some entrepreneur loans, some, you know, funding for schooling and education. That would make more sense. And just handing somebody a fish, say, here, go cook this and eat it, and you're good. And just show up here every month and we'll give you
another
fish.
No, and they come back and they say, where's my fish?
Oh, my goodness.
Where's my fish?
I saw my Don't Feed the Bears and Don't Feed the Alligators, right? I talked about that in South Carolina. Why shouldn't we feed the alligators? The poor things are hungry. Well, because they're going to come back and take your leg if you don't have a fish for them. So I just don't think it's encouraging productivity to simply hand out money to folks just for being. You know, I get the spiritual nature of it all, that folks shouldn't have to work to take care of themselves and so forth. But in the real world, yeah, you have to be self-sufficient, and you have to take care of yourself. You can't just rely on the tourist who's going to show up every day and give you a fish. Our poor alligators would get lazy. They wouldn't know how to hunt.
Well, there's no doubt that the pharmaceuticals are part of the global eye. I like to call them global eye, kind of like Winklevi, you know, kind of global eye. Mm-hmm. And did you see this one? They must be going down in sales or so. The FDA, they're drafting guidelines outlining how a plan could go into effect pretty quickly to get cholesterol-lowering drugs and and blood pressure medicine over the counter.
Right.
I mean, over the counter. Isn't this good?
Sure.
Slightly more than half of U.S. adults, about 43 million people who need cholesterol medications. Notice the word need.
Everybody.
Fake news.
Everybody needs
are taking, according, 43 million people are lowering their cholesterol with, 75 statin. Million Americans are using high blood pressure meds.
Uh-huh.
Andrew Goss is not, because even though
I listen to one radio Patrick Timpone.
So they're going to make these things over the counter. Mm. Now, isn't that interesting that now you talk about a really backward system, Andrew Goss, could take a high blood pressure medicine or cholesterol medicine, knowing the side effects of these things, and go to Walgreens and buy them with your little debit card. Yeah. And
if one is good, two must be better.
And the UN is out there with Codex trying to get people to not buy so much vitamin C because it's dangerous.
Dangerous.
That's just a little. I mean, it's just...
The world's gone crazy, you know?
I don't know nothing about birth and babies. The world's gone crazy.
Yeah. All right. World's gone crazy.
That's kind of weird.
It certainly has as it relates to our money, so I'm not surprised that it would go crazy as it relates to our health care.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Here's something good that you might enjoy. If you are one of the 380,000 or so people that owes the IRS more than 50 G's, right?
Oh, you need to go to jail.
Well, no, you don't. Well, yeah, they'd like to do that, but jail notwithstanding, if you try to travel, your passport might not work. 360,000 Americans, and the government is now cracking down on Americans who have outstanding tax bills by holding your passports hostage.
Choke on your passport.
That doesn't sound like making America great again.
No, not so much.
Not so much. Now, is that even constitutional?
Well, it's up to the federal government who comes and goes. So I guess it would be constitutional. They're in charge of the borders.
Oh, the government
stop
we
you
love
from leaving. What do they do? They stop you from coming back in? Huh?
I'm not sure. They just all it says is here. Well, if your passport runs out and you try to get it renewed, they're not going to let you do that.
Okay.
But I'm not sure if they're actually going to stop you at the border and say, hey, dude, you owe 54 G's here. You can't go to Bali for the summer.
Wow. So,
That would not be good.
They were going to seize your hotel room and your luggage.
That would not be good.
No, but it's a little more of the velvet glove. They're desperate for revenue, and that's the problem. And so for folks that owe money, or that have money, this is the real danger, as they decide that they're going to tax this and tax that and choke you for this or choke you for that. You'll find increasingly interesting areas where they will tax you or attempt to collect the tax you owe using that sort of a method.
But we did have a nice big tax cut, so that's a good thing, right?
Income tax,
yeah.
The idea of an income tax is abhorrent to me, obviously. It's slavery as far as I'm concerned. A consumption tax, okay, go for it. You want to tax what I consume, then you go for that. That's within your right. But to tax what I produce, that's a very socialist idea. President is considering another round of tax cuts, I heard. I did check out federal revenue. You talked about that briefly.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
So there are those that would argue that we're not collecting enough tax. That's how come we have a deficit. And rather than cut spending, they want to increase revenue. And you could do that by increasing the number of people working. But that Yeah, when you reach full employment, what do you do then? You start raising taxes, and that's what you can count on moving forward. So these passive income generators, like a rare coin. I mean, if your $20 gold piece goes from $1,000 to $2,000 in a year, you don't owe the extra tax. You don't owe the tax on that $1,000. So that's the sort of investment that makes sense in this environment, a passive income generator.
Passive income generator.
Yeah, something that you buy that appreciates in value without throwing off a 1099 at the end of the year saying, oh, you just made $1,000 bucks, so you got to pay, $300 in taxes.
You mentioned the chart guys. Charles Nenner, I get his kind of stuff because I interviewed him. He sends me his little news thing. He said, gold traders who took our sell signal at 1365 should use a weekday to cover. If they are short, cycles are still down, and we could get lower price targets. What's he saying there in English?
Well, he's saying if you went short gold at 1365, now's the time to cover. don't stay short.
Yeah, but I don't explain to me what that means.
Well, I owe gold. I sold it at 1365, and now it's what, 1229, 1225. Buy to cover. You buy, so you owe 10 ounces of gold, you sold them at 1365, gold's now 1230, buy to cover that. Pay the gold that you owe now.
Oh, I think I understand. Yeah, I think I understand.
Okay.
I think I understand. Okay, I kind of got that. Yeah. And then he's got something else here. Let's see. Gold, as seen in our attached gold chart, we want to use weakness to cover our shorts. The gold cycle is down into August. But the silver cycle bottoms at about July 24th.
Yeah.
Downside price targets are still gold, 1212, silver at 1540. So he's saying here he doesn't think it's going to go below 1212 is what.
No. He's saying, right? So if you're a trader that has shorted gold, and listen, most of our listeners don't short gold. It's like you either buy it or you don't. You either buy it or you sell it. But there are folks.
Oh, of course.
That sell it, in anticipation of the price going down, or buy it in anticipation of the price going up. Mm-hmm. And in order to do this, they buy contracts or options. And what he's saying is if you're one of those folks who listened to the shortest in, 3 months ago, 6 months ago, and you owe gold because you've sold it short, this would be the time to fill that position because he sees silver bottoming out in July 24th.
Yeah.
And he sees gold maybe at 1212. That's the down in August. Gosh, we're there now, folks. So I would rather be a year early than a day late when it comes to this sort of thing. And my strategy over the years that I've adopted is I can't tell you which day is going to be the bottom of a particular market. So you're better off to just let the trend be your friend. Average in, buy your way in an averaging type position. Don't try to do it all at once because you just never know which way the market's going to go.